It is again, it's good to be present with everyone again and to be back in the Bay Area. I just came back on Thursday night, so it's like just a few days. And good to be back home with one of my home communities. And I want to explore tonight developing gratitude and thanksgiving at a time of crisis. And want to explore that theme together with you in a few different ways. I think it's good, first of all, just to remember the nature of gratitude and its link with generosity, that often we are grateful because of the generosity of others, including the earth, other beings, other people. And so there's this link between gratitude and generosity. And it's a very beautiful and important quality that we can be developing every day if we take it on as a conscious practice. I think it's also a very important quality in a time of crisis, which is ours right now. If you had forgotten that for a few moments,
sorry.
I'm sorry to have reminded you. Brought you back from your Sunday slumbers, or our Sunday slumbers. And so it's, I think it's helpful also just to remember something about this holiday that we call Thanksgiving, which I've often appreciated as a non-commercial holiday, and one that often could bring families together, for better and worse, but often for better. But it also, necessarily, because of the stories around Thanksgiving, brings our minds to our relationship to the people we call Native Americans. And some of us, I don't know, some of us may have some connection ourselves. I don't know if anyone here does. You know, some of my friends do trace Native blood in a sort of a non-Elizabeth Warren type way. more from ancestry and culture, but not to. I wasn't meaning to be disparaging, but I think I was a little bit. So it's a kind of a strange holiday, right? It has these beautiful qualities, but we trace it back in the culture of the schools and the popular mythologies to something which apparently actually took place, that the ones that later were called the Pilgrims, they didn't call themselves that, came to New England and arrived in 1620. Interestingly, 1 year after the first Africans were brought. So, and that there was a celebration of the first successful harvest, and that the some in a neighboring tribe, the Wampanoags, were invited and came and apparently, according to the record, brought five deer to eat. They didn't have, they didn't have pies. They didn't have some of the foods that we connect with Thanksgiving. But that did happen. One of the reasons that the Pilgrims were able to settle where they settled is that the native people who lived in that area, which I think called the Patuxent, they had been almost totally wiped out by disease brought by previous Europeans. So they weren't there. You know, they were wiped out, and Squanto, who was one of their tribe, was actually sold into slavery in, I think, 1614, and later came back and did play a role with the Pilgrims, but all of his tribe was gone. You know, and he was able to get out of slavery and come back. So maybe for some of us, the holiday can raise this question of partly from the years, can raise the question of our relationship to what the philosopher Jacob Needleman called the two founding crimes of the culture, of the society. It's not always pleasant to look at, but, you know, would you be willing to bring that up in your Thanksgiving holiday dinners? Something to consider, because those wounds have not been dealt with, right? You know, we haven't had even the beginning of our own Truth and Reconciliation Commission, right? That's part of our practice, is to open to what's difficult, to open to suffering. So I just thought I'd mention that, because it's something that all of us, myself included, it's something to remember at this time. You know, and it's, I think, related to the ongoing crises. You know, the unresolved relationship to what happened, you know, has happened since those years. Right. So I'll come back to that element of crisis. I wanted to mention that near the beginning. It's not easy, it's not pretty, it's not always mentioned in the usual Buddhist talks on gratitude, but I think it's important. You know, so I wanted to name that. And yet we can look to what's really positive about the holiday and positive, you know, about the related practice, that gratitude is a very beautiful, powerful quality. Again, it comes out of a sense of having received generosity, and it comes out something, it comes freely, really, from the heart. It doesn't come out of typically an exchange, right? It's something which comes more freely from the heart. And I remember Thomas Merton, who was a Catholic contemplative, whose monastery I visited just a little while ago as part of my travels. You know, I go out to the Abbey of Gethsemane every year and meet. I typically would have a meal with a monk there who's a friend named Brother Paul. Brother Paul just came out with his memoir last year. He gave me a copy. It's called In Praise of the Useless Life. I think sales are quite good. this year he's out with he's a little bit the Merton of our generation, although not quite on that scale. He writes poetry, he's published photographs, he's also been central to Buddhist Christian dialogue. You know, the monks there regularly meet with, especially with Tibetan monks. They went to Mammoth Cave together. So this year he's out with a collection of poems called For Nothing. So nothing has significance in Christian theology as it does in Buddhism. Yeah. We make a big deal out of no thing. We sometimes call it emptiness in Buddhism, and they do too. Anyway, that's my little. So this is Thomas for in that tradition. A lot of they basically chant five times a day, and they sing psalms and they sing other chants, and they're essentially chants of gratitude and praise. That's a lot of what's there. And this is from Thomas Merton. He said, "My own personal task is basically to praise God out of an inner center of silence, gratitude, and awareness. This can be realized in a life that apparently accomplishes nothing." So my friend Brother Paul was a student of Merton, so he was, his notion of doing nothing was inherited or passed on. "Without centering on accomplishment or non-accomplishment, my task is simply the breathing of this gratitude from day to day in simplicity, and for the rest turning my hand to whatever comes, work being part of praise, whether splitting logs or writing poems or best of all, simple notes." And that sense of gratitude is very central to many of the Native American traditions. And some of you know there was a well-known address from the Iroquois that is sometimes identified as the Thanksgiving address from the Iroquois, or the Haudenosaunee. I don't know if that pronunciation is right. So this is from the text. They sometimes call these words of gratitude the words that come before all else. "With one mind we turn to honor and thank all the food plants we harvest from the garden since the beginning of time. The grains, vegetables, beans, and berries have helped the people survive. Many other living things draw strength from them too. We gather all the plant foods together as one and send them a greeting of thanks." And they go down in the Thanksgiving address to the different beings in their lives to give thanks like that. So we can have, again, it's something maybe to reflect on Thanksgiving. We can have thanks for the bounty of the earth. We can have gratitude for the particular land we're on. We can have gratitude for our friends, our family, our community. We can have gratitude for this community here, for the meeting every week, for having the connections. We can have gratitude for the Buddhist tradition, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. We can have gratitude there. And this cultivation of gratitude is something that some of us may do already as a regular practice. I know I have a very small gratitude practice where 4 times a day, as part of a larger, kind of almost like a vow that I work with, I see what I'm grateful for in the moment. And I do it just briefly, you know, it like takes 10 or 15 seconds. I just say, what am I grateful for? And I just see what comes. And it's part of a 2 or 3 minute, almost like a vow and setting intentions that I do typically before breakfast, morning, afternoon, evening. And typically when I meditate, it's at the beginning. I do it at the beginning. So we can invite that gratitude. And another way to do gratitude practice, which we may want to do, is to just see what we're grateful for and connect with gratitude for 2 or 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, my invitation would be to see if you want to do that practice in the next week, for example. Do it 2 or 3 times a day, just for a minute or 2 or 3, just to tune in. You know, you can do it in a more elaborate way, like write down on a piece of paper what you're grateful for. And, you know, the kind of 2 ways of doing it. One is to have something you go over that goes over particular things you're grateful for. Another is just to see what comes to mind when you invite that gratitude. And you can go to these different dimensions of life, the earth, the friends, and so forth. Uh, I think that gratitude goes in many ways against the grain of the culture, right? That it's having one's heart there. Ultimately, it's for everything. That's where I'm going to come back to that theme of crisis, because there's actually gratitude is, you know, we tune into it selectively, but it really is there for everything in our lives. You know, so we don't, it's not like we're grateful for some things and then we complain about others. That's not the spirit of gratitude, right? I was with Joanna Macy earlier this morning. She had a one-liner. She said, "Complaining is so boring." In any case, so there's something that's very healthy about expressing gratitude, I think. And I know in groups and organizations and families, what is it like when we express gratitude for each other? Or appreciation. You know, that we can express appreciation for others. I know in groups, sometimes, I haven't done this for a long time, but sometimes in groups, we just go around a circle and express appreciation for the person next to us. Mm. Right? And it really changes group dynamics. Mm-hmm. Right? Because so often, again, it's the negativity bias, you know, I'll focus on the negative and gratitude. Anyone who has a negativity bias strong, anyone have that? Gratitude practice goes in the opposite way. There can be really, really an antidote if we tend to go to the negative. It's also interesting that we can really have gratitude for even what's difficult, that we can appreciate what's difficult, and know it might be that we have a sense that we are learning from what's difficult. That being with what's difficult can, I heard someone say a day or two ago, build character. You interested in building character? Had enough of that. So, but it can. It can, that there, you know, that ultimately gratitude isn't just for what we like, isn't just selective, but it can be even for the difficulty. And that's sort of a more profound level of gratitude. This is. I'm going to read two poems. One is from Hafiz, you know, from Persia, from what, 700 or 800 years ago. He's the lesser known Sufi poet after Rumi, but some of you know him. There's some books that come out. So he says, this is a poem translated as "My Eyes So Soft." Don't surrender your loneliness so quickly. Let it cut more. Let it cut more deeply. Let it ferment and season you as few human or even divine ingredients can. Something missing in my heart tonight has made my eyes so soft, my voice so tender, my need for God, he says, absolutely clear. So it's powerful how difficult moments potentially can deepen us. I think it was Nietzsche who said something quoted often, "That which does not kill me makes me stronger." But I don't know, that's not quite the spirit I want to bring out with it, with this teaching. But we can actually sometimes really, in our difficulties, if we really fully make it a part of practice, we can come to appreciation and see even the really difficult moments as part of our own learning process. You know, that I'm working with someone now who is going through quite profound challenge, you know, incredibly intense. It has aspects of the working through of the residues of trauma with awakening to the sacred, all mixed in together. And there are definitely times when this person can really have gratitude for the whole process. At other times, I want it to be over. Right? So But there can be that, you know, at the clearer moments, there's the gratitude. I wouldn't have worked through this hard stuff without these difficulties. And it's bringing me further towards awakening. This is a poem by W.S. Merwin called Listen, also about gratitude for the difficult. With the night falling, we are saying thank you. By the way, this was written over 30 years ago. We are stopping on the bridge to bow from the railings. We are running out of the glass rooms with our mouths full of food to look at the sky and say thank you. We are standing by the water looking out in different directions, back from a series of hospitals, back from a mugging. After funerals, we are saying thank you. After the news of the dead, whether or not we knew them, we are saying thank you. In a culture up to its chin in shame, living in the stench it has chosen, we are saying thank you. Over telephones, we are saying thank you in doorways and backs of cars and in elevators, remembering wars and the police at the back door and the beatings on stairs, we are saying thank you. In the banks that use us, we are saying thank you. With the crooks in office, with the rich and fashionable, unchanged, we go on saying thank you, thank you. With the animals dying around us, our lost feelings, we are saying thank you. With the forest falling faster than the minutes of our lives, we are saying thank you. With the words going out like cells of a brain, with cities growing over us like the earth, we are saying thank you faster and faster. With nobody listening, we are saying thank you. We are saying thank you and waving, dark though it is. So I was also reflecting on what gratitude means in a time of crisis. It can be related to that Merwin poem. You know, that choose your crisis. Which crisis do you focus most on? You know, we have political crisis. We have clearly a climate crisis. We have crisis of inequality. Maybe we could name others. You know, we have crisis related to the unresolved residue, as I was mentioning, of what Needleman called the two founding crimes. You know, those residues are still with us, right? And they're kind of ongoing crises. And how do we relate to those? And gratitude can be really important. I think with gratitude and an opening of the heart, we can actually more easily open to what's difficult. You know, that there's a way that gratitude can help us to be with what's difficult, and it becomes a very important practice. It reminds us of what's important. It can help us open up to what's painful and difficult, which we might not want to open up to. And in doing so, we can bring our hearts and our wisdom to what's difficult and painful, to these crises. You know, and that lets us maybe address them more coming out of our wise hearts, rather than just maybe our cynicism or our simply our pain, right? Simply the pain and not wanting to look in that direction, you know, or wanting to focus elsewhere, right? And it can help us maybe to ask that question of when I'm really in my gratitude and with my wise heart, how do I want to respond to our current time? I was very inspired by a person I work with who, she's in her kind of like early 30s. Does good work. She's a practitioner, has done quite a number of retreats. She works, I think, in a Waldorf school, I believe. Waldorf or Montessori, I forget which one. One of those progressive schools. But she said, even though I do work I think is right livelihood, I want to more actively work for addressing the crises. And so we had a session and we explored it, and I asked her, we went through a kind of an inquiry process, and I think each of us maybe could do something like this. That I asked her, which crisis do you want to really address? And she said for her it was the climate crisis. She wanted to address that. And then I said, how many hours a week do you have to devote to it? And we got very concrete. She said 5. Right? And I said, okay, for until we meet again, research 3 or 4 options, maybe groups to work with, in which you could put out 5 hours and feel pretty good about what you were doing, and then really stay with that 5 hours. So she came back the next time. She had a clear group she wanted to work with. Since then, she's devoted 5 hours every week in this way. To me, that's quite a model. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful model. If everyone, you know, if... I think if half of our society, or one-third, or maybe one-quarter, or maybe 10% of our society did that, I think we'd be very close to actually having a big change. You know, I think it's that activation, you know, and community plays a big role. That activation is what's necessary. I always remember a study that was done about 10 years ago of nonviolent movements, and they found that every nonviolent movement historically, including against dictatorships and pretty rough situations, every nonviolent movement that had the participation of at least 2.5% of the population always succeeded. No exceptions. I mean, we're talking about 20 or 30 examples, right? Always success. So I'm offering that out to us, you know, offering it, you know, to myself as well. Does that resonate with you? How to do that and stay in community, and have that action come out of your practice, come out of your sense of wisdom and love. So I wanted to do a group practice together. Okay, ready for that? Okay, that'll follow up on this. Okay, I want you to find one other person, maybe the person next to you, and turn your chair to the person, towards the person. I counted and we have an even number. Raise your hand if you need a partner. Okay. Anyone in a group of 3? Okay, we have one group of, well, 3, that's okay. You have 3? Okay, well, one person be with Corey? Okay. If you haven't introduced yourself to this person, you can do that. Okay, and so what we're going to do is we're going to complete a reflection one at a time. So we'll have one person go and then the other. We can call, we'll have person A and person B. And so decide among you who will speak first. Okay. Raise your hand if you're willing to speak first. Okay. Every group should have one person who speaks first. Okay? Okay. And so here's what we'll do. We'll do a few of these. The first was basically I will give a few words and you take it from there. You, as it were, complete the sentence and you can go on for maybe about 2 minutes or so. Okay? And the first sentence is, in a time of crisis, I am grateful for, and then you continue. And it's not just one thing. You can talk for about 2 minutes, and I'll time it, and then we'll switch. Okay. So in a time, and you can choose the crisis that you want to. In a time of crisis, I am grateful for, and just can go on like that. Okay. Any questions about the instructions? Okay, so person A, you can just say, in a time of crisis, I am grateful for, and then continue. Now, person B, in a time of crisis, I am grateful for, and just continue. Finishing up. Now we'll do another one. We'll start with the second person, person B, so to speak. And it'll be similar. In a time of crisis, I'm scared that... Okay? You can see what is fearful or what you're scared of. In a time of crisis, I'm scared that... Person B.
Oh, person B. That's me. In a time of crisis.
first person again. In the time of crisis, I'm scared that, or I'm fearful that. Okay. Person A. Finishing up again, we have a third and final question. We can go back to person A. In the time of crisis, what's important to me is, and then you continue. In the time of crisis, what's important to me is person A. Yeah. So now, second person, person B, in a time of crisis, what's important to me is, and continue. Thank you. So finish up. Thank your partner. And let's take, let's stay in the groups of two. And just take about 3 minutes and just talk to your partner about anything that came up for you that was interesting, any insights. Just do that for a few minutes, informally conversing, not in turns, but just informal conversation with your partner right now. Okay? Just about 3 minutes. So finishing up, and thank your partner, and let's come back to the whole group. So just come back to the whole group, please. So just a few closing reflections, and then we can open things up to the whole group to talk together. You know, I was partly wanting to explore gratitude in relation to Thanksgiving. But again, the question arose, what does Thanksgiving mean at our time? In our time? Or what does gratitude mean? And gratitude is both can be a very simple practice of just seeing what one's grateful for once or twice or three times a day for 2 minutes at a time can make a difference. And it can be a really beautiful practice. Again, I think of it as an honorary member of the Brahma Vihara. For those of you who don't know that term, those are the four stations of the heart in traditional Buddhist practice: loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. Those get all the attention. Gratitude's pretty cool also, and can really be part of the group. So we now have five, and could also add a few others to it as well, like maybe forgiveness and a few other things. So anyway, it has these amazing qualities connected with generosity. In the Buddhist tradition, gratitude is also very directly connected with metta. It's connected with a sense of having received kindness. And so one's grateful, whether it's the kindness from the earth or the kindness of other people, kindness of beauty. And so gratitude can play this very crucial role in reminding us of the positive when we might otherwise be focused on the negative, whether it's the difficulties in our own personal lives or the bigger things. And then also, as I was bringing out some in the questions, but bringing out in the discussion, that gratitude can also be a powerful support in difficult times, right? That, again, I was partly inspired to go in some of these directions by spending some time with Joanna Macy. And in her work, she works with gratitude first before one goes into difficult material. And so strengthening gratitude, and then see if you can bring gratitude into difficult things of a smaller nature or medium nature. And then you can also bring them to these big things, like we explore, like crisis, right? Like systemic crisis of the different kinds that we're facing. So again, to build up to that. So gratitude can play a very crucial role for keeping balance when things are challenging, and can be something which also can open the heart. It gives a kind of deep resource as we go into hard stuff, or if hard stuff is there, like to have a regular gratitude practice if you're doing work on the climate, right? I think really, really crucial. Again, it's all of this is pointing to a very different way of responding to difficulties and crises than the traditional, more antagonistic, polarizing approach. Right? So I thought I'd just finish with one of my favorite expressions of gratitude, which is this book called St. Francis Preaches to the Birds. And I don't usually do this in Dharma talks, but I will read the entire book to you. And it won't take that long. Okay, so you're going to get a whole book reading.
Can we see the pictures too?
Oh, yeah. Okay. This is St. Francis. It's 5 a.m. Wake up, St. Francis. He opens the window and sings, tra-la-la. He brushes his teeth and says, thank you, teeth. He washes his toes and says, thank you, toes. He gets milk. He drinks his coffee. It's a little bit anachronistic, but he gets milk, drinks his coffee, and says, thank you, coffee. He goes through the town, through the apple orchard, over the pasture, and up the hill. And the birds come flying, 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 flying. Then St. Francis preaches to the birds until the sun sets. Yes, until the sun sets. Good night. That was from the originator of the Bread and Puppet Theater in Vermont. Some of you may know that. The reflections on this exploration of gratitude and, you know, the whole mix of the different areas we explored tonight. Maybe something that came up in talking with another. Or just sharing something that came up would be fine without not needing a question. Peter.
Well, there is a formal practice of gratitude that comes from Japanese psychology called Nikan, N-A-I-K-A-N. And it is to ask to spend some time in reflection at the end of the day to ask three questions. What have I received from others? You could say, just what have I received? What have I given to others? What have I given to others? And thirdly, what troubles and difficulties have I caused others? And it is there's more to it than that, and there are actually formal Nikon retreats.
Yeah.
But as a daily practice, it's surprisingly eye-opening.
Yeah.
And it perhaps doesn't sound like it, but indeed it is.
Thank you, Peter. Yeah, those simple questions can be powerful. How many found just the three questions we explored opened up material or had some power to them? Yeah. Patty, please.
I just want to take a moment to thank you, Donald. I feel total gratitude. I'm sure the Sangha shares it with me for your generosity in teaching us and the way you are in the world and the example you set by your life and by your teachings. I'm just enormously grateful and wanted to express that. So thank you.
Could be just to share some of what came up, just talking with the other person that seemed helpful to you or interesting or yeah.
I have a regular gratitude practice, and it stemmed from a talk with Sally Armstrong a number of years ago. And it was kind of what you were talking about earlier. It was a blog a person wrote, and it was really, he talked about radical gratitude. And in his blog, he had his shed broken into, and his bike stolen, and other things happened. And now I think about this during the course of the day. I mean, he was grateful that he could replace his bike. He was grateful that he wasn't driven by a need to steal.
Yeah.
And I think about that myself sometimes when if I'm driving somewhere and the person's like speeding past me and being, I'm grateful that I'm not in their hurry.
Yeah.
And it's just, what I liked about his talk and the practice of gratitude is it's a shift of vision. It's a shift of view. And so, you know, things in my past that I thought were irredeemable because they were very tragic, I realize that there is gratitude that can be found in the death of a loved one because of the kindness of others and the opening of your heart.
Yeah.
And I just think that with you, gratitude is right there with the problem of horrors as far as a good daily practice to open your heart.
Yeah. Thanks, Mary. Yeah, and sometimes even we can interpret gratitude as very close to what's called the mudita, or sympathetic joy, you know, because it's, you know, in the tradition, one actually didn't practice gratitude for self, for what was there for oneself. That was traditionally thought to be not so skillful. You know, to have joy in what you were getting or something in your life, but and so gratitude can be a version of that. You know, actually be very close to that. Yeah, and it's just the can be very powerful. And I guess I was also exploring how it's related it can be really part of a process of opening to what's difficult, right? That it can play a very, very special role there. That if the difficulty is there for you on a family level, if you're working with some of these larger issues, to have a regular practice of gratitude, really, really crucial, right? It's just to avoid some of the well-known phenomena that we see, getting depressed, just focusing on negative scenarios, being caught in negative beliefs. And the gratitude can really cut through a lot of that. And it also can, I think, be the fruit of deeper insight. Yeah. Maybe one more and then we'll go to the meta cards. Yeah. We have two hands up.
I just wanted to remember aloud what I learned in the Awakening Joy class.
Oh, yeah.
Which is replacing, oh, I have to do this with, oh, I get to do this.
Yeah.
I do that with the shower a lot. I've got to take a shower. I have to take a shower. I get to take a shower. I get to have hot water.
Yeah.
I mean, wow. I get to make a salad. I mean, so.
That's great. That's great. You reminded me that one practice that I learned, Sylvia Borstein, she was one of my initial mentors coming more into teaching. And one of the practices she gave was, when you take a shower, really enjoy it. One of Sylvia's practices. Just to have gratitude for the shower. Right? Yeah. Is it brief, do you think?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll make it brief.
Okay.
So, I'm sitting here thinking, I don't have anything to say, but just reflecting on something you said and that Mary said, I have a lot of gratitude for the Dharma teachings of acceptance, letting go, and equanimity.
Yeah.
And I just want to say that out loud in front of witnesses so that I can remember that.
Yeah.
Gratitude for the practices of acceptance, letting go, and making peace with what is right now.
Yeah. Thank you.